Welcome to the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. And in the week that we embark on yet another election campaign, what are the rules for covering it on the radio? Journalist and consultant Paul Chantler is here to tell us. Stu Clarkson has the news, David Lloyd's back in the archives, but first a word about one of last week's topics.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, innovative solutions for creative radio people.
On the recent roundtable, Simon Cross and Ford Ennals were enthusing about S-Town, the latest blockbuster podcast from the makers of Serial and This American Life. So this week, I've listened to all seven episodes, or chapters as they call them, and I can confirm that it is a remarkable listen. And one thing was particularly noticeable. There was absolutely no signposting. Now, we're all taught, aren't we, to trail ahead. Our programmes are full of, after that, this, and I'll be finding out why, and we'll be speaking to. But in S-Town, there was nothing. Not even a previously on to start up each episode. Brian Reid, who presents and co-produces the podcast, talked about it with Andrea Catherwood on the Radio 4 media show. And I thought he made an interesting point.
What we thought of it as is a book, like a novel. It seemed to suit the story, and it seemed like an interesting experiment to try. We didn't want to have to end every chapter or feel compelled to end every chapter with a cliffhanger in the way that serialized TV often does. We wanted to be able to have quieter, more ruminative endings, as well as, you know, what happens next endings. Serial was modeled more after TV, serialized TV. You know, we were explicitly talking to each other about modeling this after a novel a little more, but we were kind of keeping that to ourselves. We didn't think that was a sexy thing to sell, basically, that we were doing this nonfiction audio novel, essentially. And I think I thought that it would be a little subtler, like Julie and I would know, like the things that were novelistic about it, but maybe the broader audience wouldn't so much. And the fact that what I'm seeing the reaction to be is that people are not only getting what we were trying to do and saying this reminds me of reading a novel and, you know, there were parts of this that are novelistic, the fact that they're getting that, but also pointing to it as the reason that they like it is so cool. Like, I'm just so delighted by that and surprised. Like, I really did think that we were being subtler than I guess we were. We were a little naive about that, I guess. And I just think that's awesome.
Yes, that's it. It's a radio novel. S-Town surprises you. The biggest events, the most startling revelations just happen. And I think they're all the more effective for it. Have a listen. All seven episodes are available wherever you find your podcasts. But now back to the UK and the forthcoming election. What does the law say about reporting it for the radio? What will Ofcom and the politicians be listening out for? Paul Chantler has published a brilliant little guide to the Representation of the People Act, and he's been giving me a few tips.
Well, it's all about three words, really. Impartiality, it's about fairness, and it's about balance. And I think most people in the BBC and commercial radio know that there are rules surrounding the coverage of the general election. But this guide that we're publishing, that's Chris Stevens and I of Diva Web, we're publishing on his website, is specifically aimed at community radio because I think they get very confused about what they can and cannot say and cannot do. And they can blunder into a lot of trouble. Ofcom take this stuff very seriously. You can also break the law. There could be fines. So it's pretty important stuff.
Balance, then, Paul, doesn't mean that you have to allocate precisely the same amount of seconds to each candidate in each feature that you do.
There's no requirement to give equal time to all parties. Not every party has to feature in every item, but overall, you have to be impartial. In other words, you've got to be seen not to be supporting any one side, and all the major parties must be treated equally. You've got to give due weight to all the major parties to achieve balance. And that all kicks in from when Parliament is dissolved on Wednesday, the 3rd of May. After that date, you need to achieve balance. That means that news teams will be wise to keep timing sheets over the length of the whole campaign, recording the coverage given, you know, the duration of it, in what form, whether it's copy, an interview, a wrap or a package, and also the transmission times. But the whole thing is about fairness because Ofcom and the law take a stern view of anyone who prejudices the fairness of a general election. And in fact, political parties monitor stations for any hint of bias, particularly local political parties monitoring their local stations. So these rules apply and should be implemented by BBC, commercial, and in fact, community radio stations. It's important you get it right.
Okay, so how do I define political balance in, let's say, Sussex, when I know that the national requirement is that I talk about the Scottish Nationalist Party as the third biggest party, but of course, if I'm in the south of England, I don't have the SNP standing. How do you define what constitutes the balance between your major parties in your local area?
In Sussex, for example, you need to give due weight to the coverage of major parties, and that is defined, Sussex being in England, as the Conservative Party, the Labour, the Liberal Democrats, and UKIP. There are also requirements to cover smaller parties and independent candidates, but that has to be appropriate coverage. You have to consider their past electoral support, current support based on opinion polls, and the number of candidates they have. And that varies in different localities, but that's what being impartial is about.
So what do I do if I'm on air and a candidate says of another candidate, well, of course, you do know that Bloggins is a paedophile?
Well, that is potentially defamatory, because not only will the candidate who's saying that about the other candidate have to prove that the person was a paedophile, but also you as the broadcaster are repeating that assertion, and potentially you could be done for libel. So if that were to happen in a live situation, there is a partial defence, which is called innocent dissemination. But in those circumstances, you are partially protected from being sued as the broadcaster if you didn't realise it was going to happen, if you took precautions to ensure that it didn't happen, and that you reacted and took that person off the air or qualified it in some way. So live broadcasts are partially protected. That, of course, applies to phone-ins as well. And that's why a lot of stations use delays on phone-ins.
But what about if that same candidate stands up at a public hustings and makes the same accusation? Can we report it if we say this guy stood up and he said this publicly?
Yes. The reports of a public meeting, hustings, for example, are protected from any action, legal action for defamation, as long as those reports are fair and accurate and they don't have any malice attached to them. In other words, you're not doing it out of spite or anything like that. So if you're reporting a public meeting, you're protected from libel if those conditions are met.
What do we do these days about opinion polls? I mean, they were mostly wrong last time, so there's a lot of suspicion about whether we should be reporting them at all, but I'm sure people will. Are there any rules about how we should or shouldn't present information that's come from opinion polls?
I don't think there are any official rules, but an opinion poll suggests something. An opinion poll doesn't show something, or it doesn't prove something. So I think as long as you get the wording right, it's fine. Of course, on polling day itself, you can't publish the results of an exit poll before the polling has finished, and that's important as well.
Okay, so what do I do when I'm planning my coverage of the election campaign in my area over the next week or two? Let's say I'm doing the breakfast show. Should I be thinking, OK, well, I'll have every candidate on every day, or is it OK to have the Tory on the Monday and the Labour candidate on the Tuesday and the Lib Dem on the Wednesday and so on and so on? In other words, can I achieve the necessary balance over a week or a fortnight, or do I have to achieve that balance within a show?
I think it varies. For programme packages, for example, pre-recorded programme packages, which are reports about a particular constituency, they have to include equal contributions from each of the main parties. On the first broadcast, the first time you broadcast it, the package has to include the name and party of every candidate. If you rebroadcast it, you can direct listeners to a website link. In discussion programs, all candidates have to get roughly equal airtime. You don't need to use a stopwatch, but the chairman or chairwoman, the presenter who's chairing the discussion, has to be impartial. And if there are any absent candidates, the chairman, chairwoman has to put forward the policies of those people who are absent. But balance can be achieved over a period of time, over the whole campaign, not necessarily within one period of time.
So just to be clear, one of the things that we do hear a lot on the radio these days in political coverage is that line about, and you can read a full list of the other candidates standing in this election on our website. Is that good enough?
Not on the first broadcast. On the first broadcast of a programme package or a discussion, you have to list the name and party of every candidate. At a subsequent broadcast of that same package, you can direct listeners to a website link.
OK, so the only challenge then, Paul, is to make any of this interesting.
Well, indeed so. And in fact, a lot of stations just ignore coverage because A, the rules are quite complicated and could land you into trouble, so there's a bit of a fear factor at play. And B, they just feel that people have had enough of politics. But if you get it right and you get the right discussion going and the right arguments going, it can be great radio. So this is not something necessarily to shy away from, but you just need to inform yourself of what the rules are and how they apply to your station.
Just remind us where we can read your full guidance, Paul.
It's a three-page guide, and you can find it on devaweb.com. That's devaweb.com/election.
Thank you very much, Paul Chandler. We'll talk to you soon, by the way, about your new radio station, Fix. Don't go into it now. We'll do it another time because we'll come back to you and do that on another podcast. But in the meantime, thanks ever so much for helping us out with your guide to election coverage 2017. Paul Chandler, thank you.
Thank you, Trevor.
Let's have some news now. Here's Stuart Clarkson.
Broadcast Bionics, innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Yes, thank you, Trevor. Here are the top stories from Radio Today over the last 7 days. Capital London's new breakfast show is going to be presented by Roman Kemp and Vic Hope. They replace Dave, George and Lila, who left last week. Roman moves from weekday evenings on the Capital Network, while Vic has been doing shows for Capital Extra. Roman's replacement on evenings across the Capital stations is going to be JJ. He's been doing the late show on a Thursday, Friday and Sunday night. Fix Radio is giving away 20,000 free bacon sandwiches in its first 40 days on air. The London DAB station aimed at tradespeople has set a launch date of the 26th of April. Presenters announced include Trevor Smith, Ben Harmer, Paul Baker and Ian Payne. Bauer Media says it's raised more than £21.8 million through the Cash for Kids charity in 2016. This includes £6.4 million in cash donations and £13 million worth of toys as part of the Mission Christmas appeal. Various special programmes aired over Easter, including a radio debut for the former ITV News presenter Mark Austin. He was on Global's LBC on Good Friday and Easter Monday. Radio 4's arts programme Front Row is going 6 days a week from September. It's replacing Saturday Review. And more speakers have been announced for the upcoming Doing the Dab industry event on digital radio in Birmingham. BBC WM lunchtime presenter Caroline Martin, BBC Radio's Brett Spencer, Mike Newman from Free Radio and Amy Southall from the SRA in the Midlands are joining the already announced lineup for the event on the 3rd of May, which has been organised by Digital Radio UK and the Radio Academy Midlands branch. And don't forget to check out our Radio Today news podcast, out every Friday morning with a more detailed look at the big stories in radio each week. And for the latest news as it happens, head to radiotoday.co.uk or follow us on Twitter. We're at Radio Today.
Thank you, Stu. David Lloyd after this.
Visual radio smarter and cheaper. Virtual director from Broadcast Bionics combines your social media, messaging, photos, audio and videos with intelligent camera control and automated graphics. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk. Radio Moments,
David Lloyd. 10 years on Breakfast Radio is a real achievement. 15 years is even more so.
Our breakfast with Kings and Leon, sex Politics on Fire, the best story you'll hear all day on the way in a minute. We're talking teeth. We had some drama in our house yesterday. I forgot to text the tooth fairy, so she didn't come, and I said to my daughter... Oh.
Ed James, who took the helm of Breakfast on Heart West Midlands this week in 2002. Staying with the West Midlands region, this week in 1989, BBC Heartland launched. It was a short-lived 4 hours a day offshoot from BBC WM. It served East Birmingham and it lasted just 2 years.
The Breakfast Show with Claire Catford. Heartland's Radio.
Yes, back then we all had that jam cut, didn't we? The station used WM's 1458 AM frequency from 8 till midday. It had a fairly small team of staff, and they did a daily news-based breakfast show and also had a double-decker bus, which had a studio in it, which they used to take out to OBs every day. The experiment was to test if the BBC could run neighbourhood stations. It was all funded by a special grant from the Director General. I wonder if he still has those. But the 1991 budget cuts saw the end of that service. Earlier this month, Dave Berry said farewell to Capital London Breakfast, and it was this week, 13 years ago, that his predecessor, Johnny Vaughan, took over.
The weird thing is,
through all that, what's really nice is that's what we use to entertain people. Sorry, I brushed against your breast then a little bit. It wasn't unpleasant. But the funny thing is the thing we really like are the texts and things we get and the calls we get from callers, because they kind of entertain us. Mm. So all the things that we use to entertain other people, they're really good. But actually, what makes it worthwhile is when someone comes on with a hilarious story.
It's the content or a little text that came from our little soldiers that really make the breakfast
show. It's brilliant.
We
had a text the other morning from a woman just saying, "I just found a salmon on the path near Finchley. Has anyone dropped a salmon on the way to work?"
Just salmon.
And that entertained me. I couldn't think that happened. It was really good. It was really nice.
Johnny Vaughan taking over Capital London Breakfast this week in 2004. And there he was with Lisa Snowden. He lasted 7 years on that coveted slot. Breakfast is a very particular day part, and some great presenters have fallen victim to the thought that they think breakfast's right for them, or their management think that breakfast's right for them, when it's not. This week, 22 years ago, Steve Wright ended his stint on Radio 1 Breakfast after 15 months.
You silly kids!
Wednesday, 27th of April, 1994. Good morning! Hello, Ione. Good morning. How are you doing? You're looking good. And hello, Julie.
Hey, good morning.
Nearly forgot your name.
You
there. I know, I'm terrible. Good morning, Mick.
Hello.
And good morning,
good
Richard.
Morning.
Chancellor Cole's in London today for talks with John Major. 7:22. Wipe the sleep from your eyes. Or is it sleep?
Steve Wright, who ended his tenure on the Radio 1 Breakfast Show this week in 95. The sound of a crackly Lillibullero is part of the character of the BBC World Service. And it's 75 years since that tune debuted, not on the World Service, but on the BBC Home Service. It was on a 1942 programme called Into Battle.
Into Battle, the fighting spirit of the people of Britain.
Delightful, isn't it? It was a jig, originally dating back to the 1600s, and still heard to this day, just about every hour on the World Service. Great positioning statements in radio are fairly rare, and as we know, they're often ignored by listeners. One of the world's most famous was, "Give us 22 minutes and we'll give you the world."
All news, all the time. This is 1010 Wins. You give us 22 minutes, we'll give you the world.
Good afternoon, 89 degrees, 2 o'clock.
This week in 1965, 1010 Winds launched All News All the Time and is now the oldest all-news station in the United States.
Here is WINS General Manager Joel Chaseman. WINS has become the first and only radio station in the New York region to present a continuing all-news service, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, news is at your fingertips whenever you want it. In addition to local news, as it happens...
In the early days, the rehearsals weren't too promising.
The most boring, droning, monotonous broadcast you can possibly imagine.
Happy birthday, 1010 Wins News. That format change from rock and roll was this week 52 years ago.
Delivery, baby.
time was Marie Adams on the Peacock label, Johnny Otis's Bam Doom Boom Diddy Wah Wah. And yours truly, Alan Freed, the old king of the rock and rollers. Here's a new rock and roll fan club in the Bronx for the students of Julia Richmond High School. Tilda, Dolores, Joan, Ida, Manna, Carmen, Martha, Diana, Carmen, Lydia, Barbara, Eva Mae, Norma, Jean, Ruby, and
Mary. You just love those lists of names we used to do. We lost Ed Stewart just over a year ago, and this week in 2006, he hosted his last show on BBC Radio 2. He'd been there off and on since 1968.
There's Dusty Springfield. You don't have to say you love me. That was one of the last records we played on Big L, Radio London, nearly 39 years ago. Oh, even getting on for 40, if you want to look at it that way. Anyway, I've been surprised at the depth of feeling expressed by yourselves in my leaving. Well, it's touched me and it's astounded me, but not entirely surprised me, because there's such a love of the type of music I've been playing at your request over the years. I can imagine that you're disappointed and in many cases devastated at its...
Ed Stewart's final regular Radio 2 show. So, with the launch of Isle of Wight Radio 27 years ago...
Welcome, for the first time, to Isle of Wight Radio.
The pirate radio North Sea International, RNI, jammed 47 years ago.
No free Western country has ever jammed a free broadcasting station, even in times of war.
The final proper Alan Freeman Pick of the Pops on Radio 2, 17 years ago.
And don't forget to join Dale Winton for the normal Pick of the Pops tomorrow at 2 o'clock on Radio 2. Ta-ra.
And Ofcom consulting on The Future of Radio 10 years ago, in which they said, we recognise stations should have the flexibility to offer a network show within daytime, but to go further than this would risk stations becoming national services with local opt-outs. How different things were. Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments. That's it for this week, with our thanks to David Lloyd, Stu Clarkson, Paul Chantler and Brian Reid. This podcast is produced by TDC, where we have about 50 fewer people than worked on S-Town. Hope you enjoyed it anyway. More next week. Ta-da!
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.